Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal: enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God bless.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And this is Rewind for the week in which we had a statewide primary for the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction. J.R., the incumbent, Tony Evers, 69% of the votes. Lowell Holtz, 23% of the votes. John Humphrey, 7% of the votes. Are you surprised that Mr. Humphreys did not too well?
I wasn't surprised from talking to people. He came in third place, but surprised at kind of the low number that he got. Plus, Evers had a good margin of victory. I mean, you know, 70% almost is not bad in a low turnout primary to show that you're in a position of strength coming out of the primary going to the April election.
Well, and also, I know you want to address it later, but 324,000 votes are pretty good.
Yeah, not bad. So surges in like seven of the 10 biggest counties I counted up had more people turn out in this spring, February primary, than in 2009, last time we had a DPI primary without a Supreme Court race on the ballot. So, you know, some interest going on there. But kind of takeaways from this primary are looking at April are a couple things. One, Lowell Holtz came out with his 23%. Is he damaged from what happened the last 2 weeks, this discussion about he and Humphreys calling each other liars, talking about
potentially colluding,
yes,
over whoever beats Tony Evers would give the other a job, potentially.
Potentially. Those discussions, is he damaged from that? And two, will Scott Jensen invest in this race? I mean, Jensen, the former Assembly Speaker, now a major school choice advocate, he runs organizations that play in elections,
right,
has access to donors who care passionately about school choice. Holtz is considered more of a friend to choice than Evers is. Will they invest in this race? Because if they will, they can kind of cover up a lot of Holtz's deficiencies. I mean, in talking to people in the past week or two, there's not been a very positive image of Lowell Holtz's campaign. Did not raise a lot of money, was not terribly organized. Some of the way he handled the media with this discussion about Humphreys was not very well done.
Right.
So he's got some issues. But if people will look past that, conservative donors who care about the choice program will look past that and invest a lot of money, you can make a referendum on Tony Evers and what he has or has not done, not about Lowell Holtz and his deficiencies.
Right.
If that happens, the next question becomes, will WEAC, which has been a shell of its former self when it comes to spending money in campaigns, but can WEAC at the National Union to kick in money that could then offset or at least combat choice money?
You've turned the page now to some of the issues that are going to be emerging and some of the differences that we know exist between Tony Evers and Lowell Holtz. Now, the issue of third-party spending, let's go back. One Wisconsin Now, that liberal group, found a Holtz email saying, I was asked to get into this race by a conservative reform group. WINER is its acronym. Wisconsin Needs Necessary Education Reform. You and I know this is a group begun by former state representative and former DPI candidate Don Pridemore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Before we get to Scott Jensen's group, does the Pridemore group WINER have any major clout here?
I had not seen yet a report showing that they've got major resources to put into this race, not on the scale of what Jensen has been able to in past races. So that's the first thing there. The other interesting thing, those emails that One Wisconsin Now released, Holtz had told a colleague that this group was going to basically handle his campaign, fundraising, organizing, everything else. That could be an issue if you want. I mean, the campaign ads is Lowell Holtz right themselves between this discussion with Humphreys, this, and some other stuff, that it would be hard to kind of go after him. But will the money be there to go after him? That's
okay.
The question.
Now let's go back to it. You referred to former Speaker Jensen. Mm-hmm. His group is now American Federation for Children.
Yes.
They, as you alluded to, they played very heavily prior to the November 8 elections.
Mm-hmm.
They were a force in some of those assembly races.
Absolutely.
Wausau, Dodgeville, things like that. If Mr. Evers' margin is 69%, three times what Holtz got, is that too big of a mountain? Might the Scott Jensen group say, hey, why throw money away?
Between the margin and Holtz's issues, that could be a factor that sways him from investing. But if you look at the turnout, it was about 360,000 plus who voted in the DPI race. If passed is precedent, we should see about 850,000 people vote in April. Mm-hmm. Now, there's no Supreme Court race on the ballot. There's no major mayoral race, no kind of executive race. There's nothing major other than like school board races and some other stuff to drive turnout. So, but typically, we see in the 800,000 neck of the woods for turnout. That means you'll have twice as many people, then some, turn out. So there's still room to grow if you can, again, make a referendum on Evers and not about Holtz.
Right, but there's a couple other major differences that are going to be highlighted over the next number of mm-hmm. weeks before April 4. One of them is testing. Holtz says that we're now adopting and using the forward test. That's completely broken. Throw it out. Evers says we completely got it right. That's one issue. Let's talk about Education Secretary Betsy DeVos. Mm-hmm. When I asked Tony Evers whether about Betsy DeVos, Tony Evers said, I am more qualified to be U.S. Education Secretary. And then Holt says it's a good thing because if the DeVos-Trump administration brings in a lot more money, it would be not only money for, yes, public schools, but also private schools. And he points out that his dad, when he retired as a Milwaukee police officer, started a Milwaukee private school.
This is a classic liberal versus conservative race.
It
is not partisan, at least, you know, in theory, but is very much a left versus right race. Lowell Holtz got through the primary in part because he appealed to conservatives through talk radio. Some of the talk show hosts in Milwaukee really got behind his campaign and pumped him up. They're not very impressed with Mr. Humphreys. That likely helped Holtz with his margin because he ran a radio ad, one that I could find, that said he's the only person in the race who did not sign the recall petition as Governor Walker. But other than that, there wasn't like a big groundswell of organization that I saw. Some smaller groups who pushed Holtz via social media likely reached out to their members. But there was no ad campaign to speak of from an outside group or a statewide one that I saw that would tell you, oh, this is why this guy got through. So he had pockets of support. Talk radio helped. Now, how do you parlay that into general election victory? Talk radio can do only so much in Milwaukee. It doesn't reach western and northern Wisconsin. And can there be other people who come in that would help Lowell Holtz with that? Because otherwise, I mean, Tony Evers, on the one hand, you could go after him for things he hasn't done, for failing schools in Wisconsin, for millions pumped into Milwaukee, whatever metric you want to use.
And Holtz does on one of those metrics. He says that having the biggest gap in the nation, achievement mm-hmm. gap between white children and black children, he says, he accuses DPI, and I had to look up his quote. This is institutionalized racism on the part of DPI that they haven't done more to close the gap, achievement gap, between white and black children. That's one issue he's out there on. He asked Tony Evers about that. He lights up. He says, our agency is all about race. We talk about the racial factors that hurt African-American learning every day, which gets us into choice. You know, mm-hmm. choice, never been a fan, Mr. Evers, but it's a question of Tony's position is don't expand it and don't detract even more from the support for public schools. Mm-hmm. Mr. Holt says, I want choice. There shouldn't be any limits on choice. The income caps on the current choice program should be removed. So those are two other differences.
You know, another thing about Evers is while he hasn't been a friend to the voucher program, he hasn't necessarily been hostile either. And I've talked to some Republicans and said, look, it would be easier.
He says he's a realist. He understands it's not going away.
Republicans tell me, look, it'd be easier to work because we have the governor's office and legislature to work through them to set the policy, expand the program that way, than spend the money it might need to prop up Holt and get him through general election. So
right. That's fascinating. Okay, another major, on the same day, you had the audit committee examining the problems with the Wisconsin Department of Transportation. And this was the first time Secretary Dave Ross was appointed about 7 weeks ago. This was the first time he publicly talked about problems with the agency. Because it was the first time he came out and publicly talked about it, let's listen to a little bit more than 2 minutes of what he said.
Your audit report is helping me answer those questions. I am here to reiterate what I stated in our response to the audit. The Wisconsin Department of Transportation will implement all, and I emphasize all, of the recommendations contained in this report, In doing so, we will improve transparency, revise outdated policies, and most importantly, become a better steward of tax dollars. This is critical. We must work to restore the public's faith and trust in our ability to manage resources, deliver a safe and effective and efficient program. In fact, we've already taken steps to implement audit recommendations because it was important to me that we show good faith in beginning our response. The audit also reaffirms that steps have been taken since 2011 to improve the management of the state highway program. The I-3990 and U.S. Highway 1218 junction in Madison, the audit noted that the Beltline interchange costs were not included in the I-3990 cost estimate listed in the TPC report. Costs for this interchange are dependent on the ongoing environmental process, but the recent estimate put the full bill cost in the range of $550 million, not included in the TPC. I reported this number with the February 1st TPC report, but I do not accept it. We can do much better if we live by our priorities and ask the right questions. We will reevaluate this project and report a cost that meets Wisconsin's need without taking from the greater needs in other places. There's no question that the audit revealed inefficiencies within the state highway program. So the question still remains, how do we do better? The answer is to use the template of this report. If there's anything, and this is interesting, this is the first time I've been in government where people are asking for less but better.
Right.
Honest truth. Yeah. I think every single person has said, hey, hold your horses. What are you doing here? Now, will we have an effect on those projects within that 24? I highly doubt we will. But we will be able to help improve the process.
JR, here you have the new transportation secretary saying, boy, there was a lot about the agency and how it projected costs that was broken. We're going to adopt the recommendations of the audit, but you and I have read the audit, and the audit said in $9 billion worth of projects, these reforms would have saved only like $3 million, $127 million. So Voss comes out with this mea culpa. We're going to do better. We're going to implement the audit. How do you think he played, given legislators on both sides of the issue? Assembly Republicans not quite satisfied, and yet Chris Capping is saying it would be extremely inappropriate to give more money to an agency that can't even put a budget together properly.
Well, in the grand scheme of things, it hasn't changed the debate about a revenue upper for transportation. You know, you talk about Capping's comment, there are plenty of Senate Republicans who are raising the issue of this is not the time to invest more money if they have these problems. John Nygren, co-chair of the Finance Committee, also part of kind of the Assembly GOP leadership team, that's been talking about how do we find a way to put more into transportation.
So and on that note, let me stop you. Here's what Nygren: road conditions are bad and they're getting worse. Maintenance budget is lowest in the Midwest. Excuse me, I just wanted to plug in the Nygren quote.
But what he's also saying is that these issues with how they account for road projects may mean that the billion-dollar deficit, we call it, which is what they want to do versus what they have the money to do, it actually may be a bigger gap, especially a bigger problem, the tip of the spear, he calls it, what's going on. So this hasn't changed the dynamic at all in that discussion in the Capitol, and it's still Governor Walker saying it's not a time right now with the money we have to invest to raise revenues for transportation or raise a tax for transportation.
Okay, but I'm left with two impressions. Number one, you had the Secretary of Transportation saying our agency, oops, forgot the Beltline connection to I-3990, and that's $550 million, although you heard the quote, he doesn't buy the number. That's a huge oops. Mm-hmm. Point one. Point two, the Audit Committee recommended a bill telling the Wisconsin Department of Transportation that henceforth it must consider inflation. Duh.
Yeah.
Okay, so where does this spin next?
Well, Ross is the new guy, so he's coming in trying to, like, look forward. What was really interesting is that the difference in the tone that Secretary Ross used in this hearing versus Secretary Gottlieb, his predecessor, back in late fall when he went forward the Transportation Committee.
The engineer.
And basically had a more combative discussion with lawmakers about what's going on and was fairly defensive of the agency, saying, But anyway, that is remarkable, the difference in tone between the two of them.
And just a P.S., you reported this morning that the Transportation Development Association is out with a two-pager saying, have you considered this, basically, in the debate? And I want to read one line. Beginning with this month, February 2017, future expenditures are adjusted using the Global Insights Chain Price Index for state and local gross investment in highways and streets. The takeaway there is, oh yeah, we're now starting to consider inflation.
And but remember, TDA also is pushing for more money for transportation.
Yes,
so they
are.
they have a dog in this fight. But going back to it, I don't see yet a change the dynamic of what we've been talking about for, it seems like, 2 years.
Oh yeah.
With transportation, we're stuck in the same spot. And I'm dying to find out, will anything change between now and that budget assigned? Or how can Robin Voss, the Assembly Speaker, get the dynamic change between now and the time this budget is signed?
And I want to come back to something you said last week. I think you rated the idea of raising the gas tax, 30.9-cent gas tax, as more dead than ever. And in the wake of this hearing, I agree with you.
Hmm?
Yeah, see? Attaboy, J.R. Also, the governor released his capital budget, $839 million in building projects. Now, the subset of that is how much in additional bonding? $450
million. Yes.
And help me, JR, these were both the lowest building program and the least bonding in the four budgets governors recommended?
If you add up what he wants to borrow between transportation, the capital budget, and then, you know, there's a little sprinkling of bonding here and there, other stuff.
Yeah.
It's basically the lowest since 97, 99, somewhere roughly around there. Now, the difference with this budget versus the last one is all the bonding last time was in transportation. This current budget, he used existing bonding authority to do all the building projects, which he pared back dramatically. So this one is more borrowing going into building projects, a focus on maintenance, similar to what we heard with roads, right? Where the money for roads went into maintenance. We're trying to catch up on project UW system. But there are also kind of like some high-profile things like addressing some issues at King Veterans Home, you know, improving the water quality there. New crime lab in the Milwaukee area. Now in Milwaukee, it could be
$75 million.
It could be in either Milwaukee or Waukesha County
for a law enforcement center. Yep.
Stuff to address.
$85 million at UW Milwaukee building upgrades, including Sandberg Hall.
So some
$24 million. I'm just going to provide a number for what you mentioned earlier. $24 million for National Guard Readiness Center in Appleton and $19 million for a dam. So the UW didn't get much of what they asked for in terms of buildings.
We're going to have a new cream puff facility, though, at State Fair Park.
Thank you. A new cream puff facility. Also, there was some type of a new facility for veterans recommended 2 years ago in Madison that was not funded?
Basically, it would be a veterans kind of home in Madison and help some folks stay closer. They didn't fund that. In terms of corrections, they're reading through the recommendation. Corrections wanted a number of new beds.
Yes.
And Walker basically said, we're not going to do this now, but we're going to do a long-term study of the needs for our prison system and figure out where things should go. So that'll be something to watch maybe in the next budget if he's still around to do that one.
I understand. I interviewed Secretary Litcher yesterday, so I have these numbers. We now have about 22,700 inmates, and at the end of the next biennium on June 2019, we may have between 23 and 24,000. So we're going to continue to see the upper. But Mr. Litcher also said, given the age of some of Green Bay and Waupun, there's a need for a long-term study. The secretary cannot recommend building new prisons since it wasn't in the governor's budget.
But what's tricky for those prisoners is, you know, some of them are at the point where they're so old or infirmed or whatever that in the view of many, they're not a threat anymore. But you want to release, you know, a convicted felon because he's old and bedridden, that can be a touchy situation. So finding a facility to house those folks is going to be something they have to address at some point.
Well, don't get me started on that, because to prepare for the Litcher interview, I had to look up the number of inmates, male inmates that are between 85 and 95 years old. We have five of them in our Wisconsin prison. Okay, just today, the state Supreme Court, you had a fight between Voces de la Frontera, who sued Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark. Voces wanted ICE, what's it stand for? Immigration and Customs Enforcement?
Yes. So there are these forms that kind of show a little bit more detail about who's being held. I think it's for 48 hours. And they want to access these documents to see if Clark was complying with President Obama's previous orders about enforcement of immigration laws.
Yep.
Basically, they won at the circuit court level, the appeals court level. The Supreme Court says today that no, these forms aren't actionable under federal law. Because they're not actionable under federal law, they qualify for an exemption to our state law, and you can't have them.
Yeah, and I just want to read the summary from Chief Justice Pat Rogan's act. Any record specifically exempted from disclosure pursuant to federal law also is exempt from disclosure under Wisconsin law. Federal rules precludes release of any information pertaining to individuals detained in a state or local facility, and ICE forms contain only such information. It was a 4-2 verdict with Justice Ziegler not participating. Now, have you had a chance to read Anne Walsh Bradley's dissent?
No, not yet.
It's very interesting because she says this is yet another public records request that fails our mandate to have open records in Wisconsin. And she says not necessarily when something is exempt under state law, it's not necessarily also exempt under federal law. It's
and because of the decision they got to the exemption or federal law, that was the base of their ruling, they didn't get the balancing test we often talk about it, whether it should be released. This also follows the Supreme Court saying, no, DOJ, you don't have to release the videos of then Waukesha County DA Brad Schimmel,
yes,
leading these law enforcement seminars that the Democrat Party sought at the 2014 election.
And while we're talking about David Clark, where was he yesterday?
He was in CPAC out in Washington, D.C.
I haven't seen him. Did he do the cowboy hat?
He did the speeches. He also had the draft Sheriff Clark pack was out there. I think it may be today they're handing out 18-inch bobbleheads of Sheriff Clark. They're trying to get him to run for U.S. Senate.
Has Clark ever expressed any interest?
In talking to people who are kind of close to him, they say he hasn't spent much time thinking about it, that he has not ruled it out, but hasn't also given it much thought. We're still on the impression he wants a job in the Trump administration. The question there is, what might he get? When would the offer come? Because we're now a month in. And then three, was any kind of thing where he might have an issue passing a background check. You know, what landmines might be out there for Sheriff Clark to get a job in the Trump administration? I'm not saying he's unqualified or anything like that, but there are all these things you have to go through that we'll watch that process play out.
Okay, I could not watch the Sheriff Clark speech, but how did our governor, Scott K. Walker, do in his speech to CPAC? Anything new?
No, I mean, it's more of the go big or go bold conservatives. He did his speech, but he also did his a panel discussion of how to govern as a conservative. I mean, Walker's been talking about this for a while, that, you know, the R must stand for reformer. It can't just be about the status quo. So more of that same kind of message.
He gave us his vision of the federal government. It should be in charge of the national defense. Mm-hmm. And what else?
He thinks, more likely, preserving Social Security.
Yes. So,
I mean, he's really pushing hard for a return or a shift of powers from Washington to states. He has said over and over again that this is part of the reason why he might run for a third term, is the opportunity the feds could give states to do things their own way. So that's part of what excites him. You know, he's keeping the embers warm, too, on the national front, because I get the impression that he wants to run for president someday. And
he got a warm reception yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely.
In Washington, CPAC. Okay, time for stock report.
So, voter turnout. So, I went back and looked. We had a surge in turnout in this primary on Tuesday versus the last three that had a DPI superintendent race but not a Supreme Court primary.
Okay.
So, looking at it, we saw surges in Dane County in particular, Milwaukee County. I think seven of the 10 largest counties in the state had a increase in turnout. So the question is kind of why, especially when there's no mayoral race, no county executive race, there's nothing big to say, okay, that's why it happened. And in talking to folks, it seems like one of the ideas is that there is a progressive base right now that is unhappy with President Trump, that was not happy about Betsy DeVos being confirmed as education secretary, and this is a way to express their displeasure, you know, turn out and show up. Now the question becomes, can they keep that going from now until April?
Four.
The money that will come in or could come in, will that dissuade anybody? Can they spread? Now, the unions are not what they used to be in Wisconsin money-wise because of Act 10, which, you know, basically cut off their access to the money that became part of their political operation.
WEAC only donated, wasn't it 11,000?
18,000 or something
18,000,
like that.
18,000 max. And then AFT. But anyway,
yes,
the amounts were you're making the point that given historically the amounts that they've done in these races, it's much, much less.
Now, you can still put pump money through the national union to the state union and do it that way, but can they keep the message going, keep the energy sustained, and then what will happen if somebody invests money in April? But overall, you know, you saw the first signs of, okay, there's an engaged electorate on the Democratic side that's hungry to do something.
Okay.
I mean, look, we saw the march in women's march in Madison. Many weeks ago that was 7,500 people. So there's still some energy there. Can you sustain it?
Right. Okay. So 8% turnout was rising. Mixed.
So the Dem gubernatorial field. The last week we've heard. I talked to Annie Gronick, who I interviewed
Milwaukee
in December.
Businessman. Yes.
Turned operator of Stage W, which is a org at 501c4, whatever
it's
it is.
It's holding panels.
Kitchen
table discussions.
Find answers to the problems facing Wisconsin.
Yep.
In December, he said he couldn't rule out a run for anything. This week told me he's very closely looking at a run for governor. Ron Kind.
Told public radio, hasn't ruled it out.
Kathleen Vinehout, public radio, said she's studying the 2016 returns. As she considered a bid for governor, she wants to know, was it new Trump voters coming out, or was it disaffected Dems staying home in rural Wisconsin that drove the difference? Other names are kicking around. What's clear, though, Tim Cullen still traveling the state. Joe Parisi, Dink executive, his name is still mentioned. Sue Happ, who ran for AG in 2014. She hasn't said if she's going to run for AG again or governor, but she's still interested statewide. I mean, there are all these names kicking around, but here we are with Governor Walker making more and more concrete steps toward running.
Yes.
And there's not a clear field developing yet on the Democratic side. Now, and all these folks have an issue to deal with. Ron Kind has been mentioned for almost every statewide race since I got here in 2000. Has not pulled the trigger. Talking to people who are fans of Ron Kind, say he's a different place now. He has got, I think both his kids are in college or out of the house.
Right, one's in Yale, one's UW River Falls.
So that's a difference. But Ron Kind has flirted so many times to run for Senate and governor that until he actually files papers,
they'll believe it.
People are going to be skeptical. So there's that. Also, he had like $2.4 million in the bank at the end of January for his federal account. You can't transfer that money over to a state account, so he had to start over from scratch. Not necessarily scratch, he's got a good fundraising network, but start over to raise money for race for governor. Andy Gronick is not well known. He has to build name ID, an operation.
He has to tell a story.
All
here
kinds
am
of things
I,
like
here's,
that.
Here's what I want to do.
Kathleen Vinehout is not a fan favorite of the kind of political operative class, the Democratic Party. She only had $3,000 in the bank at the end of December. I mean, I know there's a segment of the Democratic Party that hates having money in politics. I don't care how you feel about money, you have to have it to run a statewide race. And she doesn't have it right now. Cullen, you know, I mean, they all have this hitch.
Yeah.
And here we have Walker kind of solidifying he's going to run. He's got this budget, all these nice things for schools and UW and everything else. So they got it. It's not a pressing thing now, but by summer, they kind of need some people who are at their hats in the ring or making a move toward running for governor to have a shot.
Which is why they're mixed. Falling.
Yeah. A school referendum. So we looked this past Tuesday, looking at dollar amounts, more money was rejected than approved to exceed spending caps. Now, why it's noteworthy is, going back to previous three or four elections, more money was approved than spent. Now, this was a small pool of money, admittedly, okay? I think there was like less than 20 rejected, less than 10 approved. Mm-hmm. In November, it was like, you know, 900 some million was approved. But it's noteworthy because it breaks the trend. It's also an environment where Tony Evers is talking about these referendums being a reason why people are chafing at the local level about school spending. And oh, by the way, it also comes down to Governor Walker has proposed $650 million more for K-12. So maybe that money could be playing a factor in this where people are going, oh, wait a second, you know. There's this whole money from the sky coming for our districts. So just a couple more months, is this going to impact what happened? Now, there are more from the ballot in April. Got to watch those.
That's
but
true.
It's worth just mentioning that this is the first time we've seen it in the last year and a half that more was rejected than approved.
And before we adjourn, comrade, we have to note the passing of progressive liberal lion Ed Garvey. What a soundbite machine. Nobody could ever tell me I was wrong with such humor. Look me in the eyes and just shred me. Any memories of Ed?
One, I interviewed him in 2013. He had just basically getting ready for his last Fighting Bob Fest. I asked him kind of like any regrets, and he like joked that he wished his parents even more than just values and that he, you know, that Herb Cole could have adopted him. But one thing I really noted this week was former Governor Tommy Thompson, who beat Ed Garvey handedly in 1998.
Garvey Lawton got 37% of the vote.
tweeted a very nice thing about him,
yes.
but a very nice statement about Ed Garvey. It's a reminder of a time when there was still class in politics. It doesn't exist anymore, sadly enough. And there are pockets sometimes, but when you have two guys who went at it like they did, but were still, you know, nice to each other.
Yes.
And Ed told me that last interview that Tommy came off that 2012 Senate race and complained about money in politics. Like, who would ever imagine that? But that's just a sign of the way things used to be, and sadly it's not that way anymore.
Yep, we're going to miss Ed Garvey. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for February 24.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.